March 19, 2013, it's a Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro show. Started off with the John Coltrane doing an alternate take on I'll Wait and Pray. After that was Sawaka with Good Morning. Good people, I want to apologize. It's been 6 weeks since the last edition of the Watt from Pedro show. And that is due to some pretty intense touring. I was in Europe with the Sonia de Maynayo, a trio I'm part of with Andrea Belfi and Stefano Palia. And we did a tour for our debut album, La Busta Jala. And it was intense. It was really happening. You can read our diary up on the Hoop page, MikeWatt.com. Before we started, I went there for 4 days to practice. There's a farmhouse outside of Bologna in Italy, not too far from the prison, old farmhouse. And one of the cats who lives there is a man named Bruno Germano. And he's got a studio called Vacuum in the old barn, the next room where we practiced. And I got to do an interview with him. I was very interested on his journey through music, so I asked him to tell me something about it. February 16th, 2013. I'm here in Bologna, Italy. And I'm going to talk here to Bruno Germano about his journey through music. To describe it, where I am right now, it's in a field kind of outside Bologna by the prison. And I don't know, 100-year-plus old farmhouse where he's relocated his studio Vacuum. Thank you.
Vacuum.
On the show.
Yeah.
Vacuum.
Yeah.
When do you remember first being conscious about music? How old were you?
I think it was maybe 8.
8?
Yeah. No. It was... I never... that's the
Don't
first time...
Like
yeah, I think about it. It was earlier, I think. Maybe like 6 or 7 years old.
Okay.
Like listening to my dad's records.
Oh.
I mean, he was listening to his records.
You're listening to him listening.
Yeah. Because my dad is a lawyer.
Yeah.
But he wanted to be a musician, so.
How would he play?
He started playing drums when he was like 14, and then he played guitar, bass, and piano, and saxophone.
Wow.
Now he plays double bass in a jazz quartet. Like,
wow. So he had music.
Yeah, he loves music. He always...
So, what kind of records were them that you were hearing?
He was listening mostly to Elvis and the Beatles.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when was this year?
It was 84, 85.
So middle 80s.
Yeah, middle 80s.
And Elvis and Beatles
were yeah,
still
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I think that he didn't have much records.
Yeah.
But he had the ones that he had bought when he was
young,
and then stopped buying records. So the ones he was listening.
Okay, so did he play in the house, practice and stuff?
He played piano.
So you're hearing it. You're
yeah, and he was practicing saxophone, but he didn't play much guitar. That was the instrument he was really good at.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's really good at it. If you want to spend much time, well, maybe you want to practice to get better at that other stuff. Saxophone. Yeah. Both difficult instruments.
Yeah, I tried when I was like 12 with the saxophone.
Okay, and that's the first time when you want to play?
No, I started playing guitar when I was 9.
Oh, so soon after hearing records.
Yeah. And he was actually playing guitar at that time. Yeah. And I was a kid, and I said...
Did he get you one?
And he gave me his guitar.
Oh, wow.
And I...
Yeah, yeah.
I was lefty.
And so, he's a righty?
Yeah.
So you just turn it upside down?
Yeah. And he...
Okay. From Black Flag. She's lefty. But it was hard to find left bass. And she actually thought the fret hand was supposed to be the stronger one anyway.
Yeah, I learned the bass upside down because...
Also, low string on the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. I play guitar like low string on the top, but the bass.
Howard King? There was a blues guy I know. I remember when I was young that played that way. Yeah, with the strings upside down. Pretty amazing. Okay.
So he bought me a guitar.
Yeah.
A three quarter. Small yeah. one for yeah. for kids.
Yeah.
Cause
acoustic.
Yeah, like a nylon strings.
Spanish
guitar.
Spanish.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I started playing. He sent me to guitar lessons.
Ooh.
With a guy that was a real asshole.
Oh. Maybe he didn't notice.
Yeah, he didn't know like. Somebody told him he was good, but he was really into classic guitar playing.
Classical, yeah.
Yeah.
It's called the...
That kind of stuff. Like, you have to put your right. hand like this. And
even your foot.
And he was like...
Too strict.
And he was very upset about me being lefty. Because he couldn't tell what I was doing when he was teaching me stuff. And
but, you know, in the old days, there's a whole tradition in that. I think here in Italy, the left hand sinister is the
sinister,
bad hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, maybe yeah. you got right-handed, hit the left
yeah,
hand.
Yeah, they get corrected at school.
But you would lose your natural.
And he was like always telling me that you should play
the right way.
The right way. What the fuck? So.
You know what? I've heard so many people. This is really a bad thing. Young, having these bad experiences, they don't ever want to play again.
So I. At some point. I was saying I don't want to play anymore,
yeah,
or, but I love music, I like music, so I want to do it anyways,
yeah.
And maybe there's another way of doing it.
Without him.
And there was. So.
Yeah.
So when I got lessons from another guy who was actually really cool, like his lessons were... he had a 4-track on tape.
Yeah.
4-track recorder. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like playing some random chords, recording them.
Yeah.
And then let me improvise on those chords, like do whatever.
And like record. Freedom.
Yeah. And that was really, really.
Inspired,
yeah.
Develop.
Yeah.
Wow. Now this is just you playing on your own. Like for me and Andy Boone, the way we learn, some guy showed us stuff, this guy Roy Mendes Lopez, but we copied off records. Did you do stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but you're playing alone, you're not in a band yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You already had started a band.
No. I started a band when I was like...
So you're still like playing on your own or studying with this teacher?
Okay. Yeah, and...
Jamming to records.
Until 15.
Did you do any composing yet?
No.
Just improvising over these chords?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Help with rhythm and melodies. So 15, maybe high school?
Yeah.
First year of high school?
Yeah, I met two guys in my class.
Yeah.
So we started practicing like together. We found a drummer. I don't know.
Are you playing the Spanish?
No. Okay. I switched to electric. I had my first electric guitar when I was 14.
What kind?
It was a Fender, a Telecaster.
Fender Telecaster?
Yeah. No, a Stratocaster.
Strat.
Strat, yeah.
Because I'm wondering if back then, was it easier to get stuff here?
Yeah. It was like...
I think maybe...
90.
I heard stories like...
It was 94.
Maybe it was 60s.
Yeah.
It was difficult.
Okay. In 94, it was like every shop.
Every shop had Fenders.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fenders, Gibsons, all kinds of stuff.
What kind of amp?
I actually had an old Echo amplifier.
Wow.
Yeah. It was shit.
Better than nothing.
No. Yeah.
Juan from Pedro's show. After the first part of the interview with Bruno Germano, I played something from his new band, Gli Anni Luce, a tune called Le Rene di Babbo Natale. And then we heard something new from Ms. Laura. That's Thrills, Laura Meyerrotten. Porcelain Cat Skull, Laser Eye Beams in a Land of Impossible Geometry. Followed that. That's from Simon Bird. I got the privilege of sharing the stage with Simon Bird in Dublin a couple weeks ago. Great cat. Here's more of that interview with Bruno.
And then
so you guys start jamming. You find a drummer. What those two guys do?
Another guitar player, and his cousin played bass.
Okay.
So we were like doing mostly covers.
Okay. Like playing. Copying stuff off records.
Yeah.
Same way. That's how I learned it.
And it was a good school, I think. And then
jamming after school, right?
Yeah.
Okay. No gigs really, right?
No. Like there were some contests sometimes, like
really? Oh, like talent show.
Yeah, but really, really, really small. You just go to in a club and play a few, like two songs, three songs.
Yeah.
We did like
Battle of the Bands, I think.
Yeah, something like that. So, two or three of those things, and then we started composing songs.
Original.
Like trying to compose.
This is your first song. Like what was the band called?
It was.
Like when you did the Battle of the Bands, you had to tell them.
Yeah. It was. An Italian name, it was Acidi Liturgici.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
Yeah.
Because the liturgico means something like something that has to do with the church. Acidi is obviously acids.
Yeah.
And liturgici, it sounds like
liturgy, I think.
Sounds pretty much like lysergic. So for 15-year-old kids, it was funny.
You had influence. Well, actually, obviously, Pop was an influence. But what kind of guitar players were you listening to on the records?
The first guitar player I really got into was Mark Knopfler.
Oh, wow.
So when I was 10 or 11, I really loved the Dire Straits and stuff like that. But the first vinyl I played, like deciding I want to play this, it was the Pink Floyd.
Which one?
The Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, wow. So David Gilmour.
Yeah, but I don't remember being like.
It was more band sound.
Yeah. Like, I.
There's some wild solos on there, that song Time.
But. I never got into it. Yeah, it was too.
It's pretty. what do we say? Like, anthem. That solo is something else. I wonder if it was one take. Some people told me it blended different takes.
Okay.
Because it's pretty orchestrated. It's pretty intense.
But the music I really got into was the Seattle scene in the first 90s.
Early 90s.
Like Pearl Jam and Nirvana.
Yeah, because Dark Side of the Moon, I think, is
74, yeah. Yeah, it was. I think it was.
I think it was in the U.S. the longest record in the top whatever.
Okay.
Like for years. Yeah, it's huge.
Because me and my bigger brother.
Yeah.
We got some records from of a friend of my mother. She gave us like random records she had and didn't listen to. So
yeah, from her old days.
Yeah, okay. So it was Dark Side of the Moon, a live record from the Dire Straits, like the double album, like endless solos. really funny.
And of course the headband. Okay, what was the scene like for you guys
in Bologna?
And to play so young, 15 years old, you could play in clubs.
There wasn't a scene.
No scene.
No. Okay. We were just.
You had to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we, as we grew up, we met other guys playing.
Yeah.
So when I was like 17 or 18.
Yeah. End of high school.
Yeah. Stefano had another band. We were kind of rival bands.
Rivals.
Yeah.
Starting band for the both of us.
So we started playing like high school parties and.
Yeah. Did you record it yet?
I recorded the first time when I was 17 on 4-track tape.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first recording.
You yourself?
Yeah, me and the singer of the band that I had. Because my first band lasted like 2 years. And then I started playing with another guy. And we started writing composing songs. That's when we first recorded.
It was like a Tascam?
Yeah, it was a Tascam.
I just guessed.
The one with a...
It used to be so common.
With a little mixer.
Sure.
So you can...
All in one?
Yeah, you could mix, record and mix on the same machine. I love it.
I had one. Everybody did. That's why I just guessed it, because wrong ones. Companies made later, Fostex, Yamaha, but like... Tascam was the first,
and it was
our most popular.
It was, I mean, the tape got worn because of overdubs and stuff, yeah, like bouncing tracks.
Sure.
So at the end,
and did you have a mentor, teacher, or you just found it out all on your own? Yeah. Okay. Learned by doing.
Yeah.
First microphones.
And I was...
Everything very good, all right.
Yeah, like mixing on my dad's hi-fi.
Oh, so wow.
But it sounded like crap. It was really, really a bad recording.
So it didn't get pressed up.
No.
So you're doing gigs, your rival. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was his band called?
Magna Panca.
Magna Panca.
Yeah, they were, I mean, I think that we were more into Faith No More stuff.
Yeah.
And they were more like into Red Hot Chili Pepper stuff.
Whoa.
So they were funkier.
And he was the bass then, right?
Yeah, and we were heavier. Like.
Okay. Wow. But... Just play around Bologna, no idea of touring.
No. Not at all.
This is middle 90s, right?
It's 96, 97.
Okay.
Then, it was, I think, the last year of high school, I met two other guys. They were not in my class, but in the same school.
Yeah.
And we started another band.
Third band.
The third one. That was called Video Snuff.
Video Snuff?
Yeah.
Snuff?
Snuff. And
Kill.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
oh, we
Snuff movies.
Snuff videos,
yeah.
I think they actually showed people.
And those two guys I was playing this with were more into like the new metal stuff, like the Korn and Deftones, and
things
like more heavy. And
yeah.
Which wasn't the things that I really loved.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like the.
Was it Dire Straits?
No, but by that I mean I really. I still love.
Yeah, it's that okay. Music. It's okay. Music. Is
and so they were like really into this heavy stuff, and we started playing that music.
Sure.
I started playing with them, and that's the first band I made a record with.
Oh.
A tune called Il Cercone Vigiatora, Siccione. Sorry, scusi. Then we heard Trash Can Full of Nails, Something New by Guided by Voices, Peaches Pond by Frisha after that, and The Dream Sickle Bomb by Black Mouth, Super Rainbow. We've come to the end of the first hour. March 19, 2013 edition of the Watt from Pedro show. I've got more of the interview with Bruno Germano and more of his new band, too, plus other stuff. So hold tight for hour two. March 19, 2013. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
So we started recording on, it was 98, 99, and we first tried recording on the computer, like multi-track.
Pro Tools?
No. I don't know. Maybe there wasn't Pro Tools in 98. I mean, it was some very high end, like very pro.
Yeah, I used it in the studio in 90 for that Contemplating the Engine Room, just for the sound effects, because you could move things so easily. Yeah. Oh, I need the sound there. You didn't have to like line it up with the tape.
Yeah.
You just moved it. But it was a very early version. I think it was called Sound Design before it was called Pro Tools.
We were using Cakewalk.
Cakewalk.
On PC.
Yeah, it was PC.
But
it was probably the most popular for PCs. That was cheap and kind of.
We didn't even have a sound interface.
Right.
So we could record two tracks at a time. So it sounded very, very bad.
Especially like the drums.
I mean,
stereo drums. You
know, like a friend of mine wanted to like compose all the drums in MIDI and use samples, so that the drums sounded really, really, really bad. Because he was recording like the snare,
hits,
the kick, and then use those samples to.
Mouse Factory.
So
you gotta start somewhere. The fun, and the also the time it took to
endless. Because our drummer was pretty good, so he could have played like first or second take all the parts.
And here he is writing all the little MIDI notes, all the MIDI moves. Wow. Wow. You gotta, let me say, you gotta start somewhere.
So.
But this computer recording, it ends up the record.
It was a nightmare. It ended up in a demo.
In a demo. Okay.
But actually, that demo led us to sign with a label that printed, like, it was an EP.
Yeah.
We recorded, and that was the first studio experience we had, and it was 2000, 2001.
Here in
Bologna? No, we went to. It's pretty close to here.
Okay. What was the studio called?
Fear Studio.
Fear.
Yeah. On Edat.
That's a good. What did you do? Four or five songs? You said EP, right?
Yeah, it was six songs.
All one night?
No, it took.
Oh, a couple days.
Yeah.
Because my first thing was. Like, even mixed in the
like same three days of recording and 2 days of mixing, something like that. So
it was expensive.
It was.
Yeah.
For us.
Kids,
I mean, we were like 19 by then, so we had little jobs, and I was a pizza delivery.
Wow. Pizza delivery was fun, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, when the record came out, did you start playing other towns, you know, touring?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit, like outside.
Okay.
Like we were going, never more than like 400 kilometers away from home. So,
okay.
So, the most far town we played was Rome.
Okay. Well, that's a big town.
Yeah.
Van?
No, actually, like three cars. It's very expensive.
Yeah, 2 times the gas.
Yeah.
But to fit the equipment,
Or 5 people. So,
what was it like to play Rome?
We actually didn't play Rome. We played Viterbo.
Okay.
That's a
suburb.
Small town. And we play Tuscany and towns around here. Rimini, Ravenna.
It was an exciting time, though.
Yeah, really.
Your first gigs. What happens with this band?
That band, we changed the name of the band to Settlefish. Settlefish. That's the band that Stefano was
later on.
Yeah, because our bass player went abroad for studies. He was he was older than us, so he was at a university.
Yeah, exchange student.
So he went away for 6 months.
Yeah,
but we had gigs and planned for.
You gotta do this. You gotta get somebody to take your place.
So we got Stefano.
Ah, that's the connection.
He was a substitute, but he stayed.
Wow. Like
when the guy came back, he just.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm done.
So we made the record with him.
So, Stefano joins the band now.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, he's like a little less corn, more chili pepper. Did he bring stuff from his?
No.
Manya Banca band?
Because at that time...
Oh, he had the Lumiere material.
We were starting listening to new bands.
2000 bands.
Yeah, I mean, I started listening. I discovered like bands like June 44.
Wow.
And
Louisville scene, Chicago scene,
karate.
Yeah. Oh, Jeff.
Yeah.
I think Boston, maybe.
Yeah, he's from Boston.
Yeah, great musician. I've played some gigs with him in Europe, and I played his stuff on the show. Yeah, he's still making music.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Not his karate, but.
Okay. He had this band. It was. I can't remember that.
That's quite a departure.
But he was playing acoustic guitar, finger picking stuff, and it's really good.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for him. But it's quite a departure from Korn. You never really got into that.
Yeah,
the other kids.
Yeah.
They're still in the band
at
this point?
Yeah.
So
there was this. The other guitar player guy that was really heavy and bluesy, and I was like the weird one.
Okay. So the band kind of had some differences, and then
Stefano joined, and we really got together for. Composing and arranging things.
Is it trippy composing with a guy coming from such a different thing?
Yeah, really. We were fighting.
Yeah.
All the time, but I mean the result was
maybe interesting.
Yeah.
So
we made
a recording called a demo. Okay.
Because. By then it was 2002 or 3. I don't remember. Anyway, I started recording on 16 track.
Oh.
Half inch.
Atari?
Fostex.
Fostex. Yeah.
G16, okay. It's called the recorder. And.
Oh, this is in your pad?
My dad had a practice space.
Yeah.
That a friend of his was pretty a very wealthy guy, and he had this factories, abandoned factories, that he was waiting to turn into apartments. So he gave to my dad those spaces to turn into practice spaces with his band, because he knew that he was playing. And so we had this space that was in an abandoned bakery factory. So the actual space on the first floor and was really abandoned, and we got the basement as our practice space. And me and a guy I met doing, how do you call it, service.
Instead of going to the military.
No. It was I started at the end of the high school. I started working doing live sound with a.
Was a sound man?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I wasn't mixing. I was actually loading and unloading vans and.
Loaded man. Right. No, I said military because I think in Germany and stuff, you can either go in the military or you can do what they call community service.
I did that.
And it kind of defers the military.
I did that, yeah.
Oh, you did that too.
Yeah.
Instead of having to wear a uniform, you could do some other work.
Yeah, I was driving people on wheelchairs and...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I drove them where they
had to go. Handicapped people.
Yeah, where they had to go. Some were going to work.
Right.
All kinds of stuff.
And then meanwhile, you're doing mixed work.
Yeah.
Really slap work. Lifting work.
And
but at least you're around
doing
the scene.
That, I met this guy who was, who moved from Rome. He had just moved here in Bologna.
Yeah.
He didn't know anybody.
No.
So we started talking, and he had this recorder he had brought from Rome. And I told him I had a space so we can put.
You got the machine, I got the space, And then this is the Fostex.
Yeah, so we started doing little demos and
of other bands, other people recording.
Friends.
Did you call the studio or something?
Canova. That was the
Canova. That was the name of the bakery.
Yeah. Okay. And so we started doing little recordings and we demoed this band I had with Stefano.
Saddlefish.
Yeah. This time multi-track.
Wow. No MIDI drums.
And we sent this 3 songs demo all over the world. Made 100 envelopes and
mailed them out.
And an American label responded and they signed us.
Yeah.
The label was Deep Elm Records.
Deep Elm.
It's from not Chapel Hill. North Elm? Carolina. Yes.
Yeah,
South.
No, Chapel Hill is in North Carolina.
But I can't
remember.
But Deep
Elm is actually an area in Dallas.
Yeah. Deep Elm. We played there.
Oh, so you know. Yeah, that's where the gigs were in Dallas for the longest time.
Elm, I think it's the tree.
Yeah, elm tree.
So.
I don't know. Anyway, they signed. We're going to put it. They wanted to put out the demo, or did they want you to record?
They asked us for more material. We recorded live, in the practice space.
Yeah.
Really rough.
Yeah.
We sent them 5 more songs.
Yeah.
And they said, let's make a record.
Yeah.
So we they gave us $2,000 to record, but we had our studio.
Yeah, Canova.
So when we got signed with the label, we got kicked out of that space.
Damn.
Yeah.
Coincidence.
Yeah, but we found another one.
Okay.
Pretty fast. And so no windows, always a basement, sure. Very dark.
And you record the album.
We recorded the album there. Me and this other guy.
Right.
And the record came out, and they did a U.S. tour.
Invited you to come over and play.
Yeah.
Booked you guys a tour.
Yeah, the label did.
Right, right. How many gigs?
It was 35.
35 gigs in what, 35 days?
37 days.
So, the whole country?
No, just the East Coast and the Midwest.
That's a good amount of gigs for that area.
And that tour was kind of a nightmare.
Juan from Pedro Show. We started off the second hour with something brand new from Petra Hayden. She did an album of a cappella versions of movie themes. And this was God's Lonely Man. After that, we heard something from Stefano Palia. Stand Behind the Man Behind the Wire. Stefano Palia, the guitar man for Il Sogno di Minaio, the band, along with myself and Andrea Belfi. We just did 23 gigs, 23 days. Italy, France, Switzerland, Germany, Holland, England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, Ireland. It was a neat tour. A couple days back, tonight I fly to Perth, Australia to start a Stooges tour there. After Stefano's tune, we heard something from Sarlo Acrobata. Sorry, Sarlo Acrobata. That's Koya's band from Disciplina Kichma, earlier incarnation of his intense bass, incredible bass. Love that cat. A tune called Ya Zilam Yako. And then finally, something from the man we're interviewing here on the show, Bruno Germano, his new band Glee Anni Luce, with Bello Anzi Bellissimo. And then followed that was some spiel from Bruno. Very interesting, his journey through music. Here's Bruno.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, it's your first time over, though.
Yeah.
So it's kind of exciting. What, like my gig last night?
Because it was five bands touring together.
Wow.
Five bands from the label.
Yeah. We would call that like a package tour.
So...
You know what I mean?
Five bands playing every night.
It's 2 days. Maybe not five and bands, but...
14 people in the same van.
You mean it was five bands in the same van?
Yeah. That was a nightmare.
Wow. Yeah, when we, us and Flag toured together,
and
I think it was 10 people in the van.
Most people never met before.
They were U.S. people, right? Okay.
From all over the U.S., so they didn't know each other.
It's anyone. Okay.
So some people were getting along, and some didn't. So
how did you fit 15 in?
I was a very long van, just seats.
Oh, okay.
Everyone was
bench seats. So three or four to a bench. Because when we did it with Flag,
and another van with
the equipment.
With all the equipment.
See,
we were sharing that.
Yeah, I know we did. We had the stuff in a trailer. And we didn't have seats where the driver did. But we had boards and we laid there, head to toe. And there was three layers.
Well.
Yeah. Very interesting. I know what kind of vans you're talking about. They use them at airports and stuff. They have all these benches, the windows. Okay. And so it was kind of the price you had to pay to do this tour, over.
I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Really. And
I just had some struggles.
The so funniest
you're all
thing
using the same equipment too, probably.
The funny thing about that tour is that the label had a deal with Motel 6.
Yeah, the chain.
Motel chain. So every town, we always slept in Motel 6. So it was like going home every night because same furniture and... That was funny.
Oh man. Okay.
But the Midwest was very tough because it was winter.
Oh my god.
So it was freezing.
Dangerous. Freezing. Big drives.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Like, whoa.
Because we'd already had some gigs in Europe. We went to France, but we never had a proper tour, like playing every night for a month. Right. And
they're more like one-off gigs and stuff. This is a
like maybe four, five gigs in a row.
Okay, mini tour.
Yeah,
but the full. The big enchilada, yeah, it's the first one. And 10 or 11 other guys, because you guys were four?
We were five.
You were five.
And on that tour, the guy that, the other guitar player.
Yeah, the corny guy.
But by then he was not more.
He let it go?
Yeah.
All right. So what happened?
He got a job in a bank like 1 month before the tour. So he said, I'm not coming.
Wow. Wow. I know people who have quit jobs to do a tour.
Yeah. But he quit the tour.
Okay, he did the other way.
Yeah. And so on that tour we had another guy playing guitar.
Brand new.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Just for the tour.
Yeah, but you had to teach him all the stuff. Was he fast learner?
Yeah.
Not good.
He actually is the bass player of my band now.
Oh, the cat I met the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. So anyway, you have a quite experience of a tour.
Yeah.
U.S., first time over. You guys come back home.
Yeah, we got back. And then we had some shows here in Italy, some in Europe. And
the album came out?
The album was out already.
Okay.
For the tour. And yeah, we started playing like a lot. And then Stefano quit. The tour was, I think, March, and in July, Stefano quit the band. Yeah, the tour was, the US tour was very, very hard.
Trippy experience.
Yeah.
Maybe demoralizing.
He got more into avant-garde music.
Yeah, right.
So he was he didn't want to play that stuff anymore, like in indie rock, punk stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he went to music school too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. He made classical studies.
Yeah, right.
Double bass.
Double bass, standard. It's a different direction.
Yeah.
It's okay. So, were getting more into recording? too? As a recording guy.
Yeah, that was going
at the same time.
At the same time when I wasn't on tour.
And playing yourself.
I was recording.
And what about Soundman stuff? Venues, mixing?
I quit that
stuff.
Yeah. Cause
so it was just strictly recording on that same
recording
Fostex?
And touring with bands.
Oh.
Doing the sound.
Oh, so, traveling sound.
Yeah. Okay. So I was never home.
Right.
Never.
Right. You're learning everybody else's PA system. Look, Europe. But when you are home, you're recording.
Yeah.
And this place, it's the basement still.
Yeah. After a while, we moved to the first floor.
Whoa.
Moving on. we had a window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have a control room?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was, okay.
Yeah.
A little more happening.
And that has been the place I recorded into until 3 years ago.
You came over here.
Yeah.
What about, was it still that Fostex machine?
We had a Tascam.
Yeah.
So it was 24 tracks,
wow.
1 inch.
1 inch, I remember.
Just 1 inch. Nightmare machine.
Yeah, I remember those machines.
Yeah. Not good. So we kept it. We made two recordings on that. And then just...
Fuck you.
Yeah.
You guys.
And then we bought a 24-track 2-inch.
Wow.
That's the one I still have.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Soundcraft. Wow. It's a nice machine. Very easy.
Sure.
It's easier than the Studer's Atari, but it's pretty good sounding.
Maintenance, so well.
Yeah.
Gotta keep them up.
Yeah, I recapped it this summer.
Really?
Yeah.
You got it.
So, the recorder and the mixer, the console,
yeah,
are recapped.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was some work. But you got it. This is what people don't understand about analog. If you want to get into that, that's what it's about.
Yeah, man.
It's not just words, it's work.
Yeah.
You know, it's physical stuff, not plugins,
yeah,
not software.
You have to keep it going.
Yeah,
I mean,
the
more you use it,
yeah,
the better they.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
If you
exactly.
Just stop using them for like 6 months,
yeah,
you get humidity and
yeah, right. All kinds of problems.
The pots get.
Tape comes apart.
Yeah.
There's this thing in the U.S. with, you know, because
yeah,
all
if
stuff.
You don't if you don't store it.
But know. Even if you do that, it's just I'm talking about 30 years.
Yeah.
They have to bake them. There's a technique, and when you do that, here,
no, I didn't.
They put it in the oven to get the plastic to.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you know it's physical stuff. So
yeah, this summer my the pinch roller of the recorder,
yeah,
the rubber,
stuff,
it melted.
Or they can get hard and crack. And, yeah,
but that physically melted.
Wow. But this is the thing about your studio. You never went to a Pewter and the Pro Tool.
I use Pro Tools.
Okay.
Because mostly because most bands don't want to spend money on tape.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the reason.
Well, why I get a hard drive.
Yeah. Okay. It's cheaper.
Yeah.
It's cheaper, and some bands, like the younger bands, are pretty scared of tape.
Yeah.
Because
wow.
They feel they will lose the editing possibility.
Yeah, I was going to say you can fix clamps a lot easier with the digital.
I mean, I can go back and forth, tape to the computer,
yeah.
Edit, and I usually mix. I record on tape, then I put everything
in the computer.
Because I mix on the desk, but I can use automation.
Sure.
And
but you know, on the old days when you said editing, it was razor blade. Did you do that stuff? You dudes used to edit on 2 inches.
Yeah.
Cut pieces of the 2 inches. Yeah. And it was like, oh my god. You had to be very creative.
I think Albini still does that.
Oh yeah. It's funny to see masters of that stuff, and you'll see the leader, the splice tape, yeah, on 2 inch
yeah.
parts cut out. Yeah, it's like, whoa. So, you're recording a lot of bands.
Yeah,
going on tour as sound man, make a decision, like maybe not as much band. I mean, yeah. You only have so much time.
Yeah.
Did you have to make choices?
Yeah, when this band, Settlefish,
yeah.
fell apart,
yeah.
it was 2008.
Yeah.
And I really got tired of, because we had another US tour on 2005, five UK tours, 3 European tours. So it was pretty demanding.
Yeah.
And I couldn't make a living out of it.
Yeah. Right.
But recording was good. I could make not good money, but
you can live.
Enough to.
So maybe it was kind of easy to choose.
Yes. So sometimes you had like a gig that was 200 kilometers away yeah. from home, and it was paid 200 euros.
You yeah.
were 5 people with a van. And
yeah, the gas to get there and back.
It wasn't worth it. I mean, it was worth it because
aesthetic, but not making a living. Yeah. So then, what was this studio called?
It was Vacuum.
You had changed the name to Vacuum then. Okay.
In 2003.
Wow! After you moved out of the bakery.
Yeah.
Okay. The Vacuum. Now, yeah. So you. Start doing that maybe more full time. And when do you make the move out here? 3 years ago. What led to that?
That was really a hard time because I got kicked out of that space.
Oh. Yeah.
Because it was a space the property was the how do you say that, like the mayor, the city,
yeah, it belonged to the city,
so they gave it to someone else.
Okay. Yeah,
like political stuff.
Yeah, right.
So I got kicked out.
Yeah, you gotta go.
And the folks that came in were really, really assholes. Like they made moving out a nightmare because they wanted my keys back.
Yeah.
And they didn't want me to go in, even though my stuff was in.
Right. Yeah. You gotta get
like
it out.
All the equipment, everything, the whole studio. Yeah.
Through the box in the never read all the rest in protect of my loyalty. Don't need any more. I get bored with variety, I'm sure. You know I've read Jerry J, Jumble J, Sigma my Trilogy, my Ma and my Pa used to swear in validity. How can you suggest for my life is insanity and pure? Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. You just heard some more Gliani Lucha, which is Bruno Germano's band, a tune called Senza Titolo. And before that, we had Miss Melvins doing I Call You Right. That's me on bass. I was invited by Mr. Scott Krause. Join Miss Melvins in here. And we start off with something by Hugh Cornwell. Yeah, Stuck in Daily Mail Land. This is him without the Stranglers, you know. He's his own man, got his own band. I met his press man, our booker man, a cat named Yella up in Groningen. Good cat. And then ahead of that, of course, was more of the interview with Bruno Germano. And we got some more coming up in the third hour, because now the second hour of the March 19, 2013 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show has come to a close, so hold tight for hour three. June 19, 2013, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Watford Pedro Show. Started off the third hour with a band called In Zaire, which has Stefano Pelia in it. You also know him from El Sueño de Mayanayo. And a tune called Sun. After that, we heard our final tune from Gli Anni Luce, Bruno Germano's band, 2323. And speaking of Bruno Germano, here's more of the interview I got to do with him last month in Bologna.
So I could go there something like two hours a week to pack everything. Like, it's a studio. Like, everything.
Nightmare.
Cables in the walls.
Sure. Snakes.
Everything. And then I find this place.
Yeah.
So I moved.
How did you find this place?
A friend of a friend of a friend of a friend.
It was just farmhouse bought by
yeah.
the Wow. And you slowly move the stuff on over.
I mean,
and this is a farm. We're talking a barn, people. He put the studio in a barn.
Yeah, it was. It was a proper barn.
Yeah, right. With the pigs, the cows.
I mean, there were no pigs and cows when I
got
here.
At that time, but that's what it was built for.
But you could smell it.
Yeah.
So I made
it
a...
It was rough.
Yeah, really, really, really rough. So I made a project with a friend of mine from high school and... really old friend of mine who now is an architect.
Oh.
So he helped me out.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah.
Damn.
It took 1 year.
Just to get it ready. Meanwhile, where's the equipment?
You're
in the pad, okay.
Yeah.
Because you finally got it out of the old place.
Yeah.
Piece at a time. What bastards. Didn't they realize if they really wanted you out quick, they let give you more time?
Yeah,
they made it go slower.
Yeah.
Fucking idiots.
Because they thought that I was that I kept working.
Oh.
When I got there, that I wasn't moving out.
Yeah,
but
right.
Like trying to find a way to
keep it going.
Yeah.
Assholes. So. Once you got the building ready here, then it took time to get all the stuff in, right? I saw it, all the treatments, and acoustics, I mean, because it was a barn, and you know, it wasn't really built for recording.
Yeah.
And then you started recording the bands.
I mean, and during that year,
yeah,
I kept recording. And because a friend of mine had a studio like outside Bologna, so
oh, okay.
When bands were asking me to record, I went there. And
it wasn't your stuff, but
yeah, it was.
Your mind, your hands, yeah.
And maybe I did some mixing and at home on the computer.
Yeah, right. Okay.
You I had the monitors.
ITV.
Yeah, in the box. I don't like it.
Well, you're from hardware world.
Yeah.
Hard to not be used to that anymore.
Wow. It gives me a headache. Like, opening a plug-in every time you want to boost the bass.
Yeah.
It's...
maddening. Make you crazy. So not everything is easier.
Yeah.
Really?
I think it takes more time, maybe, to do the first mix.
Yeah.
When you're doing a record,
set it up.
Then just copy all the settings.
Yeah, right.
And it's pretty straightforward, but I don't like it.
No, because you're from the old school. I meet hardly anybody who uses tape in a studio, who runs a studio. Oh, that's really interesting. But you had a couple guys here. They were in your band, so you are doing music still.
Yeah.
No, it's this project.
It's called Gli Anni Luce. It's instrumental.
Yeah.
So, and it's quite different from the stuff I've been.
This is what you gave me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And we're playing. People were playing it here on the show. When we discuss something with them. And yeah, different than the Settlefish.
Yeah. Because I really didn't play for, I mean, at home I was playing, but didn't play in a band.
Yeah.
When we split up with the band, like we didn't really quit. Because after 1 year of touring,
yeah,
we just decided, okay, let's take a pause.
Okay.
Like 2 or 3 months. But then 3 out of 5 people that were in the band had another band together.
Oh, okay.
So they started touring and making records, and we just
went different ways.
Yeah.
Okay.
But different music, more indie pop music,
mm-hmm,
which is not really my.
You didn't dig.
No.
Okay. So how long? Yeah.
So I just started.
Yeah.
Like practicing with those two guys.
Yeah.
The drummer had a farmhouse on the. In the mountains,
yeah,
outside Bologna. So yeah, every time we went there,
farmhouse.
he actually had a practice room in the house.
Right.
So you had the kitchen, the yeah. And the practice room.
So the plane.
We went there,
yeah,
and it was very relaxed. We had dinner, we had joints, improvised for hours.
Yeah.
It was really fun to play that way, because I got used to like practicing for, we have a show, we have a tour, we need to have the tour done, and
it was getting ready.
Yeah, it was more like a job.
Yeah. In this way, it was more like fun.
Yeah.
Being young and jamming.
Yeah. But then we started recording those jams.
Yeah.
And
taking stuff up.
So we thought it was good stuff. So we recorded it. That's. I don't know. Now I'm starting to want to play live again.
Oh, like wow.
Touring.
Gigs. And things come in cycles. But you're recording people here at Vacuum.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So in a way you're coming back to your coming around cycle.
Thank you.
from Pedro Show. You just heard HST by Slender Lars. Ahead of that, from the extract, came Cockroach Matriarch. And front of that was Seas by Massacott. Before the music there, we had more spiel from myself interviewing Bruno Germano. Great cat. Got the last part of the interview coming up now. Truly my honor to get to speak with this man. If you were asked to give a young person advice about music, what would you tell them?
To play for fun.
Don't get caught up in the other way. And what about just making music? On the other side of it, the recording thing. What kind of advice would you get? I think some people.
About composing music?
No, the other side. Like behind the curtain. I record people. I know people that it's just their personality. I don't get in front of people and stuff. I'd rather be part of the thing that helps make it happen, like recording or sound mixing.
I like that part better.
Yeah, but what would you tell someone for advice?
Do your own thing.
Okay. So it seems like in that kind of thing you have to get in, kind of a teacher or a mentor.
No.
A helper.
I mean,
you say right from the beginning, start on your own.
Yeah, I learned myself. Like, not myself, but working with people, watching people working. So when I... our second record, we recorded with Brian Deck. That's a guy from Red Meat. He's been recording in California and Iron and Lime, a lot of stuff. And while I was just playing on the record, but I was like always behind him, watching what he was doing, asking questions, and I learned a lot from that recording.
I asked because
I don't believe in schools.
Music schools and stuff like that. Yeah.
Especially for recording. You can read a book about technical stuff. It's not that difficult. It's not.
You learn by doing.
Yeah. By listening.
Yeah. And then the other side, the performing, composing. Basically the same thing, right? Go out and try it yourself. Get your feet wet. No one can teach you
how to be creative.
Find your own sound. That's quite a goal. Because I like these sounds, like Dire Straits. But do you really want to be a Dire Straits band? Yeah, you want to be your own band, right? That's the goal. Well, very interesting, and I wish you a lot of luck. Probably a lot of people in the U.S. don't know the Bologna music scene. But then, they have their things. It's interesting. Actually, everybody has a lot in common.
I mean, the thing that the Italian rock scene owes a lot to the US. Because we don't have our rock Right. Just listen to American records.
Right, right.
And sometimes we do our own thing. Sometimes we copy that.
Yeah. It happens. It's okay.
But there's nothing wrong about trying to do something that sounds similar to what you love.
But what about Swiss band or French band or England bands?
There's a lot of them.
The U.S. ones was the biggest influence. I'm talking about influence. I know they exist.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious.
No. UK. UK a lot. Okay. Because especially...
It's probably easier for them to tour here. Closer.
Yeah. Especially in the last 10 years, a lot of indie pop UK bands came out, like Franz Ferdinand and...
Oh, yeah.
Block Party and stuff like that. They're huge.
Yeah.
They've been huge. Now it's just... I mean, it's cycles. So a lot of Italian bands started, doing that kind of thing.
Speaking of Bologna bands, who's your favorite right now? To turn people on who aren't, going to gigs here. The bands are local. Because, this is the day of the internet. People can actually check it out.
Yeah. Oh, it's, there's a band from Bologna. That's not a new band. It's called Cat.
Cat. Okay. That's who you like.
They're not from Bologna, but they live in Bologna. They've been living in Bologna since the 90s.
They're part of the Bologna scene.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll check them out. Cats? Is there any others?
Mostly are old bands, like 3 Second Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
There is one band of Andrea Cubocombo.
Cubocombo? It's a Bologna band.
Yeah.
Two of the cats? Two-thirds?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Rocco is not from Bologna.
Rocco is from Bologna.
Yeah.
I played Hobocombo.
But he lives it.
Yeah.
I played a bunch of Hobocombo on the show. Wow.
Cool stuff.
Well, thanks so much for all the help you did for us in relating your story. Here's the last thing I want to ask you. If you had to do something over, and you could... If you could do something over, what would you do?
Something
in the past.
Ah.
What would have you done different? These are weird. That's a weird question. Things had to work the way they did, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a good philosophy.
I never
call
thought.
Call it a regret or something. Huh?
Never thought of that. I just did whatever.
Yeah.
What I wanted.
That's
to
very
do.
Healthy. Because you can't change it. So why worry about what we do?
So I quit the university when I wanted to quit it.
Yes.
I just felt...
Quit the band when you did. You did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're glad you made all this because it all added up to where you are now. Yeah. Great. I wish you the best luck, man. And thanks so much for being on the show here.
Thank you for your interview and for being here.
Okay.
Thank you. And now, in a major new onslaught on the Conservative Party of Great Britain and all other governments, Zero Things Behind the Works bring you Shove It!
Todd from Pedro Show. Our last music for this edition started with Shove It, something live from Xerox Slingsby in the Works. Followed that with a new band called Fruit, and maybe their first song, because it's called the number one, you know, one. And then Back to Middle by Monomania. Ahead of that, of course, we had the final part of the interview I did with Bruno Germano, Signore Bruno Germano. Real inspiration. I think I might be able to have a chance to record at his vacuum studio this summer with my fratelli, you know, Andrea and Stefano. We're thinking of chapter two, you know, for the next album for El Sueño de Marinaio. You know, there was 3 years between recording that first one and touring because of busy schedules. But it looks like time's falling in better for us to pick it up, keep with this momentum we built with that tour. You know, in between, though, I spent, what, 3-4 days here in Pedro, and the end of that tour, which was March 9 in Exeter, I got to do a Stooges gig, and we did 9 new songs. The album comes out April 30. It's called Ready to Die. We're going to do some gigs in Australia. I promised to do a Watt from Pedro show over there, at least one, maybe two, if I can. Really excited, but it was fun, man, playing them new songs. I can't wait for other people to dig on it. I want to thank Bruno Germano once more for being on board for that interview. Very interesting. And you're a beautiful man. It's been the March 19, 2013 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.